opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
And so, like, I never really thought of myself as a leader, and then I kept on getting into positions where people asked. They kept asking, and they got to a point where it's like, why do people keep on asking me to be in these leadership positions? They must see something, and I must be able to do this. And so I just jumped in, and I was like, okay, fine. You want to make me a leader? Either I'm going to be a good leader, and I'll figure it out as I go, or I won't be so good, and either way is okay.
Buju Anin, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Cole Primo.
And I'm your other host, Leah Lem. Miigwech for joining us. Native Lights is more than a podcast or radio show. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a bunch of different backgrounds with a great mix of passions. We talk with our guests about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community. And it all centers around the big point of purpose in our lives. And it's another day, another opportunity to amplify Native voices. How's it going, Cole?
It's going great. You know, things are moving and shaking right now. I've got a lot of things I need to handle.
Not shaking too much.
not too much, I guess.
Like a Polaroid picture?
Shake it like a Polaroid picture. No, as we record this, I'm moving into the new house within the month. And so a lot going on there. But I recently got a promotion at the full-time gig. So, you know, a lot of stuff being thrown at me. Mm-hmm. But we're doing well. How are you doing, Leah?
I'm great. Keeping it 100. I don't know. I just have some energy today. It's kind of like...
No cap?
No. Okay. Hold on now.
I recently said dapping up during a conversation. And I'm like, I never said this before. What's going on?
It's just shifting language. What is language, you know? Yeah, but I'm really excited for today's guest. And before we get to that, I want to ask, Cole, do you have a favorite place to hang out? Like outside of your house?
Yeah. I think my gut reaction is Maria, the wife, and our dog, Stanley, love going on this walk by Cedar Lake in Minneapolis here. There's this little nature preserve area too that we like, and it's actually where I proposed to her. So yeah, we love the area and we love frequenting, and just, you know, it's a nice sense of calm there. So yeah, it's fun. How are you?
Mm-hmm. Well, before we move on to me.
Oh yeah, sure.
Do you tend to see similar people or same people around the area? Do you get to like recognize people over time?
Yeah, I suppose so. It's that type of area where there's, you know, it's a neighborhood and you'll see people mm-hmm. that you've seen before and give them a little nod as they're walking by. And yeah, mm-hmm. it's nice.
Well, I bet it's a little different there down in the big city. Mm-hmm. So I know around here, I really enjoy the Mesabi Trail. Again, just a nice place to go be in nature, listen to some frogs. That's always fun. But around town, the library, I always run into somebody I know there. We have First Friday art crawl, art events every month. Yeah. So we just kind of get out into community. I see a lot of people I know.
Of course.
Can't help it. I love it, for the record. and yeah, I'm just curious because today we're talking to Brandon Beatty, and he's the executive director of the Indigenous Association, which is a really cool place in Fargo. And it helps bring community together, especially around, you know, Indigenous culture and resources and things like that. So I heard of this place a while back when I was looking for Native community events. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to introduce you to Brandon Beatty. Today we had the opportunity for he and I to have a one-on-one conversation that I'm going to share with you.
Sure.
He grew up in Brooklyn Park. Mm-hmm. He's a descendant of the White Earth Nation. He's an Anishinaabe. And he lives in Moorhead with his three children, his partner, and his mother-in-law. And just for a little bit of information, the goal of the Indigenous Association is to unite, connect, and strengthen the Indigenous community in the Fargo-Moorhead area. It hosts events, and as Brandon says, it offers the chance for people to gather and heal through community connection and cultural activities. So, Brandon Beatty, and you'll get to hear how he sees his role in his own community, mm-hmm. helping bring people together. So, here we go. Bonjour, Brandon. How are you?
Bonjour. How are you doing? I'm doing good.
Excellent. Excellent. Can you take a moment to introduce yourself? Tell us where you're joining us from and a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, bonjour. My name is Brandon. I am currently recording in Fargo, North Dakota. I grew up in the Twin Cities, and I'm currently living in Moorhead, and I'm the executive director of the Indigenous Association, which is a Native American organization that serves the Fargo-Moorhead area. And its goal is to unite, connect, and strengthen the Indigenous community in the Fargo-Moorhead area.
Excellent. Well, we always like to start out by making sure we ask how the family's doing. How's your family?
They're actually sick right now. I'm kind of getting over a little sickness too. And so my twins, I have 3-year-old twins and a 10-year-old. The only one that's not suffering right now is my 10-year-old. So let's knock on wood and hope that she stays pretty healthy.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, usually it's fine. They're great, but that's too bad.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, like having littles, they bring things in all the time and you just roll with it.
Back and forth. And
how about you? How's your family?
We're good. We just got back from vacation. We went to San Diego for, I don't know, for spring break, we'll call it, and popped up to Hollywood to spend some time at Universal Studios, just kind of doing the touristy thing. Got a little bit of sun, so I'm happy to be back, and I feel a little refreshed, and kind of miss that sun, but I think, you know, there are sunnier days ahead for us. But yeah, doing well. Thank you so much. So before we get into your work, before we get into Indigenous Association, I want to know, is there anything that's on the top of your mind? Any shows you're watching, books you're reading, anything you're geeking out about?
Several different things, but I just read the Language Warrior book by Anton Troyer, which is really good. It's like one of those things that just makes you want to go out, like do all you can to like try to revitalize the language. It was super inspiring. And it was the audiobook because I really like listening to audiobooks instead of reading. It's a lot easier for me to like stay focused, or actually probably as I'm doing something else, as I'm driving or cleaning, like it's really easy to just kind of listen. So yeah, it was really good.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a favorite thing that you walked away with?
I think it's probably listening to the story of where he started and where he ended up, and just where Anton Troyer started and ended up, just shows like the longevity. Like sometimes I feel like I'm not quite where I want to be, but I'm exactly where I should be. And I'm doing the things that I should be doing right now to work toward the things that I want to see in the future. And so it's just a reminder that, like, you know, you just got to play the long game in life. And, you know, every decision and everything is just kind of building on the next thing. So looking at his life and his experiences and how he came to where he is now, it's like it's a good reminder. Like every decision matters now, and just to make the most of where we're at. Mm-hmm.
I feel like I learned so much from Professor Troyer every time I hear him talk. I was actually on the way out to San Diego. I was reading Warrior Nation by Anton Troyer. So a little theme here. But maybe we'll just jump right in then to you and your work. Can you give me a bit of an overview of the Indigenous Association?
The work that we're doing in our community right now is building on the work that's been done in this community over the last 20, 30 years. They're kind of the previous generation working toward wanting to make sure that there's space in our community for Indigenous people. We're in like an urban hub. It's not like Minneapolis or Chicago or LA. It's not like a huge urban hub, but it definitely is an urban hub compared to the surrounding areas. And we have all kinds of different tribal nations that are within like an hour, 2 hours of where we're at right now. So we have people from like a really diverse Indigenous community. And so like part of what we do is workshops and activities and events and groups and different things like that. And it's usually attended by people from all over. There's, you know, people that they don't represent their entire tribe, but there's people from all over the nation that end up in this area, and they're looking for connection. They're looking for a place to feel safe and call just their own. And we really try to make a space that is that for our community. And beyond the events and the activities, we also work on a little bit of like organizing and really trying to understand some of the struggles that are going on in our community, kind of in like a macro level, like a bigger level than like a micro, like what issue are you facing today, person that we just met? It's more like, what are all the people in our community facing, and what are ways that we can impact some of the systems to make sure that they work better for our people?
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're speaking with Brandon Beatty. Brandon is Anishinaabe and a descendant of the White Earth Nation. He lives in Moorhead with his three children, partner, and mother-in-law. He was a founding board member and is the current executive director of the Indigenous Association in Fargo, North Dakota.
Can you describe the place? Can you describe what it looks like?
So one of the things that we wanted to do is make sure that we had a space that was worthy of our Indigenous community. A lot of times when you start nonprofit Native organization and you're looking for space, you'll have churches and you'll have other places like say, oh, you can use this space, or you can use this space. And you go there and you see like, oh yeah, this is why that we can use this space, because it's dirty, it's moldy, it's dark, it's space that no one else wants. And so we decided to kind of take a different tact from the get-go and really say that we wanted space that's great because our community is great. Our community is worth having a wonderful space to gather. And so we ended up getting a lease from the Plains Art Museum in their Center for Creativity, which is a newly remodeled space in 2018 or 19. And it has like all new like flooring and all new lighting and fixtures and all that stuff. It's beautiful. It's 4,000 square feet. We have two bays, so like we have two sides. And so we have a lot of space to do different activities. We've had drum groups, like quill work on birch bark classes. In a couple weeks, we're holding the North Dakota Human Rights Summit here and just countless other activities. So it's definitely a space where you walk in and you know that it's an Indigenous space. We have a lot of art on our walls. We have a lot of different things that show you like, hey, this is our space. It's not just borrowed space. And it's comfortable. It's nice. There's couches, there's chairs, nice furniture. I feel like people feel comfortable and safe in this space.
Well, I can't wait to visit. So
you're welcome anytime.
Thank you. Can you tell me a bit about the founding of the Indigenous Association? It hasn't been around too long, but you know, as a founding board member, what did you see that kind of was that motivation for its inception?
The city of Fargo is kind of unique in the fact that they had one of the first, I think maybe the first Native American commission that was attached to like the city commissions in the country. And so there were some warriors, you know, like really getting in there and trying to like carve this space out in the city so that our people have a voice. And during that time, they were putting on a lot of different events and they were doing a lot of different activities and things. And it became it became a lot for the Native American commission to focus on the things in the city and do these activities. And they're also, it's like a volunteer board. And it was kind of growing a little bit bigger than a working board could really handle or do effectively. And so they decided to contract with someone in the community and say, hey, let's look into starting a new nonprofit and having them take on some of these roles. We had Chelsea Snyder who came in and she really took the lead and was able to get people together and start writing bylaws, articles of incorporation, and like all those, you know, things that you have to do to start a nonprofit. And then we came together and we started brainstorming, what do we see us doing? Because we knew our mandate was, okay, they didn't want to have to do the organizing for the Native American Commission or the Native American Community Picnic. That's a lot of work and it's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort, and they wanted to be able to have an organization kind of take that on. Beyond that, it was kind of like, well, what else do we want to see? And very early on, we decided we weren't going to be the typical social service agency. I'm a social worker by trade. Like that's what I've done for 10 plus years. And I work primarily with youth in crisis around like homelessness and things like that. And so I know crisis work takes a lot of time, takes a lot of commitment, takes a lot of resources to be able to do that work effectively. And so we decided kind of early on that we won't engage in the crisis work as much, but we will build the connections with people who do the crisis work and make sure that we can get people like a warm handoff. If there's something like, if there's housing issues, we know people in the community who work on housing issues. So I can make a phone call and say, hey, this person's looking for housing. Can you come by and have a conversation with them? And then there's that trust in the community for our organization. And so when we call on the people that we trust in the community to help them out, there's already a bridge built, and it's not a, like, you just go call this number and they'll help you out. A lot of times it's a, hey, I know this person. Can they come visit us right now? Which I think is good, because if we were to handle every crisis situation that came up and came through our door, through our community as a first responder, like, we wouldn't have the ability to do much else. That would be all that we were doing. It gives us the opportunity to focus on some of the cultural pieces that we really wanted to help bring to our community by bringing in like knowledge holders from the surrounding tribal nations, and also people who live in this community, to teach some of those things that maybe people don't have access to, and then connect people into folks from their home. It was a pretty intentional effort. And so in 2021 or 2020, maybe during that same year, we moved into the Plains Art Museum Center for Creativity. We have our own entrance from the street. We also have an entrance from the museum side, and it's a beautiful space. And the Plains Art Museum has been a great partner. They do a lot of art, and they have a lot of Indigenous art in their gallery. And they've had the last director for Native American programming moved on, but they're going to probably have another person there. So there's an intentional focus in one of the only accredited art museums in the region to make sure Indigenous art is like a centerpiece. There's an Oscar Howe exhibit there right now. And so they're really focused on making sure that there's Indigenous representation in what they're doing there too. And I think that's part of why they saw this as a good connection, like an art museum housing a nonprofit that works with Indigenous people in their space doesn't always like necessarily make the most sense, but it makes sense for them.
Great. And, you know, you mentioned cultural events and things like that. What did you find to be some of those community needs?
It's kind of like one of those things where it's like, whatever the need in the moment seems like the most urgent need. And it was 2020, and we all know what was happening in 2020. COVID-19 was happening. We were losing a lot of our older relatives. We were losing a lot of people in our communities. A lot of people were isolated, and they didn't have a chance to connect with people and have coffee and laugh and, you know, just do the things that we do as a community so well. And so it was a real loss for our community in so many ways. And I feel like we could focus on some of that. And it was a focus for a while, like making sure that we had those spaces. But historically, I think we're going to dive a little bit further, but like that is one iteration of our community being isolated and feeling like they don't have each other and they don't have space to be themselves and gather as a community. But I also think that mirrors like historic things that have happened to our population. And so like, as we were facing this during COVID-19, when the whole world was facing that, it was like a shadow of something that happened in the past. So I feel like having those intentional thoughts and conversations about like, how do we make sure that we don't isolate ourselves further? We don't lose the progress that we've made. We don't get discouraged. I think that was one of the biggest motivating factors and the biggest thing that we were seeing. And so both historically and contemporarily, we have those issues. And I think it's an ongoing issue with our community because of the divisiveness that happens. And also the kind of the different ways that our community divides. I think it's really important to have a space where we can get together and we can all eat food, even if we don't all vote for the same people or we don't have all the same interests or anything like that. I think it's really important that we find that space.
Yeah, it's so good to be in community and know your neighbors, because there's so many differences, even among people like in the same family. It's still good to see each other's humanity, see each other's smile, to remind ourselves that we have a lot in common as well. And from your biography, which was lovely and long, I appreciate that. I noticed that you have this really strong history of being on boards and planning committees. So not just the Indigenous Association, but others. What draws you to this visionary leadership type work?
I never wanted to be a leader when I was like getting into different things. It's just, it's one of those things that happens. So I struggled when I was in school. I actually didn't graduate high school. It wasn't because I wasn't capable or like, you know, smart enough to graduate school. There's just a lot going on. And so I was just focusing on what needed to be dealt with at that time. And also I was a kid. I was like a, you know, teenage boy who wanted to go play guitar and hang out in the woods. You know, there's that part too. And so like, I never really thought of myself as a leader. And then I kept on getting into positions where people asked and they kept asking and they got to a point where it's like, why do people keep on asking me to be in these leadership positions? They must see something and I must be able to do this. And so I just jumped in and I was like, okay, fine. You want to make me a leader? Either I'm going to be a good leader and I'll figure it out as I go, or I won't be so good. And then I'll just go back to not being in those positions. And either way is okay. I remember like back in the 80s, and the early 90s, like the diversity trope, you know, like the people holding hands around the world. And like, you know, it's like one Asian person, one white person, one black person. There's that like trope of diversity. And we had that really like ingrained as a value in our society. And it didn't really like pan out the way, like it wasn't, we're all holding hands and singing Kumbaya, but it really did set the stage for people in places of power to realize like, hey, who's around these tables and who should be around these tables? But I also think that it gives us the opportunity to say as a community, like how come nobody from where I'm from or no one who's had experiences like I've had are sitting around this table? Like it doesn't seem like it's the best way to plan for people who are so diverse in their experiences and all that stuff to make decisions for them around these tables. And so I find myself sometimes feeling like I'm a diversity hire or like a diversity like board member where they're like, we really want to, you know, hear from the indigenous community. And then I can come into a board and say, well, according to the indigenous community, we should do this. And so I think like there's a little bit of that, but also like I think being able to be in those positions and kind of step up into those positions is the only way that we change that. And as we become leaders in our communities, like we build leaders kind of coming up behind us too.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Brandon Beatty. Brandon is Anishinaabe and a descendant of the White Earth Nation. He lives in Moorhead with his three children, his partner and mother-in-law. He was a founding board member and is the current executive director of the Indigenous Association in Fargo, North Dakota. Can you tell me a bit more about your motivation? Like, maybe rewind a little bit in your life, maybe even younger. Like, is there anything that pushes you to do this work that is so meaningful, helping people connect to culture, helping people connect to resources?
It's complicated because like human beings are complicated and there's so many different factors that lead us to where we are. But I distinctly remember a few things. One of them is that I grew up in Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center area. And so I grew up kind of urban, like not in the cities, but like in the kind of first ring, second ring suburbs, very diverse community. I really liked it out there. Like shout out to Brooklyn Park with all the trails and the woods and the ponds. And like we spent a lot of time in the woods. So it was a beautiful place to grow up. But growing up outside of, so my family's from White Earth. And so like I didn't grow up in White Earth. I remember when I was a kid, I was only there like once or twice. And so I didn't have that experience. And I'm also not like full-blooded. You start talking about like, you know, I have a white mom and my dad was, you know, half white and half Native. So there's this like weird identity stuff that you struggle with when you're a kid that's like normal. And then there's like that on top of it, which really makes it confusing. And I didn't walk around with like a chip on my shoulder, but it's like sometimes feeling like you're not Native enough to be Native, but you're not white enough to be white. The white kids still call you Chief as a nickname, even though we were just like playing video games together like all day. Like you're just going to call me Chief like randomly. And then if I go like to my family, like I'm kind of the white kid, you know, like light skinned. And it's complicated, but it brought out this sense of, I didn't really have a way to express that. Indian education wasn't, well, maybe it was a thing back in the day, but I didn't have access to it. Like no one was offering that to me. They weren't offering to bring me to cultural activities or do cultural groups or do drum group or learn how to sing or learn my language or anything like that. And I see there's a lot of opportunity these days for that. And so that's good. I'm excited for that. And so there's that part where it's like, I see that I was missing something when I was a kid. And I think a lot of times, like we almost project our passions onto the world from our own experiences. It's like, well, I didn't have this, so I want to make sure other people have this. But the other part is on my mom's side, my grandma was in one of those scooters. She lived in Seattle. One day we went to McDonald's downtown Seattle, and there's a lot of houseless people in Seattle. There was back then, and there's now today too. But I remember like being at McDonald's and my grandma in there in her scooter, you know, we took the bus, they have a lift. I thought it was really cool that they could lift her up in the bus for that. And she was really independent and mobile. So we went to the McDonald's and we had our food, and this homeless guy came in and he went to the garbage can, dug some food out of the garbage, went into the bathroom. And I could hear him choking it down. Like he was eating that food that was just thrown away. Kind of broke my heart, but I was kind of like, oh yeah, this world is kind of crazy, like, you know, whatever. And then he left, and before I knew it, my grandma, like, you know, revved up her little cart. She didn't really rev it up, but in my mind I always think that she revved it up, you know, and she went out and chased him down with her other cheeseburger that she didn't eat yet. She handed it to the man, and then she came back in, and she didn't really say a word about it. But it was just like very much like we just saw that, we need to do something about that. And we can't just sit here. We can't let whatever limitation that we think we have or our ability to ignore the things around us to just like make it okay to not do anything. And so I think back at that a lot. Like I think about her, you know, she's passed since then, but I just think of her heart and her like wanting to do something to make a difference in someone's life. Not necessarily like she didn't want to do like big macro change or that's not what she was teaching us. She was just showing us through her actions and her like how she lived her life that we need to be kind and we need to be thoughtful and we really need to understand that things are happening around us and we need to try to do something about it.
That's wonderful. Well, Brandon, thank you so much for the work you do. Is there anything you want to add before we say gigawabamin?
One of the biggest things, like, culture is medicine. Learning about your people and the things that have been the medicine and the food and the community that's been around for generations is medicine for your heart. So just wherever you are, I just urge you all to find that medicine in community. Find that medicine in the people around you.
All right. That was Brandon Beatty, Executive Director of the Indigenous Association in Fargo, North Dakota, and he lives in Moorhead. Really, really fun conversation, but that's just me. What do you think?
I love Brandon's overall message that, you know, culture is medicine, and that's a great thing to be aware of. And it's always great seeing these people who build community, who strengthen Indigenous communities.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Miigwech, Brandon Beatty, I'm Leah Lem.
And I'm Cole Primo. Miigwech for listening. Gigawabamin.
Gigawabamin. You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and AMPRS with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
This is the Minnesota Dose on KFAI. A new study just published in JAMA Network Open shows childhood immunization improved over a 10-year period. From 2011 through 2021, on-time immunization of kids 0 to 9 months old improved from 22.5% to 35.6%. Improvement rates, however, lagged among those living below the federal poverty level. Researchers concluded that the study highlights a need for increased focus on immunization access and quality for lower-income families and children without private health insurance. That time period included a 7-vaccine series recommendation. Since then, RSV, COVID-19, and other vaccines have been added to the CDC's vaccination schedule. Minnesotan kids without health insurance can get free vaccines through the Minnesota Vaccines for Children program. These vaccines are distributed through local public health clinics, federally qualified health centers, rural health centers, and tribal health clinics. That's all for now. For the Minnesota Dose on KFAI, I'm Ryan Dawes.
Thank you. welcome to a special episode of Counter Stories. As many of you know, our co-founder and co-host Donald Eubanks passed away in March. He was laid to rest next to his mother in the traditional Ojibwe way on the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indian Reservation. On April 13th, 2020,